Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Well, hello there. How the heck are you?
Hey, Bevo. I'm excited to be here, as always, with my team. How's your day going?
Great. Great day. So good.
That's good. That's good. So we have a special edition tonight.
Yes, I love
absolutely, absolutely.
There's Miss Leisha. Hey, girl, how you doing?
Good. How was y'all week?
Good. It's now coming to an end. So you know it was great. I made it through.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good thing.
What you cook today?
I ain't cooked nothing yet. I was trying to cook some tacos, but I got interrupted, and I just decided I'll just wait.
Okay. Bevo, you're slipping.
Right, for all y'all that don't know, Mr. Aaron Bevo is like Chef 2000 here. So we used to him cooking stuff every day.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say you're slipping, Leisha.
Right. Well, let's get this show on the road. We got the boss lady?
Yes, we do. You know the boss lady is here.
Yeah, we sitting up straight. We sitting up straight because boss lady's in the house.
Right.
Well, we're going to get it started. We're going to say hello, hello, hello to everybody, and welcome to our Thursday night edition of Writing Royalty Radio. You know that our Thursdays are relegated to special thing, so that's why we're here this evening. My name is Tony, and I am one of three great co-hosts of the show. I'm an avid reader. I love reading and anything related to literature, and tonight I love music, too. So with that, I'm going to introduce to my right-hand co-host. Hey, Leisha, how you doing again?
I'm good. Everything is good. Had a good day and about to have a popping show right now, so I'm super excited. For all those new listeners, my name is Leisha. I'm the head of Writing Royalty Promotions as well as the head promoter for Nene Capri and Boss Lady Publishing. I am an avid reader as well, and I am an admin for 4 different groups on Facebook. And this is going to be exciting. We're going to have a good time tonight.
Uh-huh.
And we also got Mr. Aaron Bebo. I call him the number one center. He's the director with the pen. He ain't cooked today, though. He's also Chef 2000.
Yeah.
So you had a good day. So what you got on your mind? So you going to get some tacos going?
Nah, I got this show on my mind. I can't wait. I'm excited to hear, you know, about the man behind the music, you know, the man who brings us the hits, and, you know, the person behind all these great, you know, entertainers that so many people love. It's good to hear the background story, you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean,
absolutely.
Right from the horse's mouth. And, you know, this man has a lot of achievements. I'm very, very excited to have him on the show and to be finding out a lot of things that I'm sure, you know, a lot of people didn't know, sure I didn't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm ready. I'm,
absolutely.
You know, I love hip-hop and music, so that's really my thing. I'm on it. I can't wait to get him on.
And it's always interesting to meet that person behind the scenes, making that music happen, pushing that artist ahead.
Yeah, for real.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bebo said, it's nice to hear it from him. You know, not hearsay and they say. We get it straight from the source, the man himself. So I'm excited, too. So how's Boss Lady? She's kind of quiet. She got an eye on us. Hey, Boss Lady, how you doing this evening?
They got me on mute. They had me on mute, man. No one likes to hear anything I have to say. They just they didn't introduce me. I'm just sitting over here, you know. I'm in my swivel chair, but I don't think that people can really see me in the actual studio. I don't know if they can see me. They like kept talking past me and stuff, you know. I didn't know what was going on. And then you looked over there.
I got you, Boss Lady.
And you was like, oh, she's here. There she is. So then it was all good. You know what I'm saying?
It's good. It's good.
Y'all don't believe that, dude. I hope y'all don't believe it.
Hey, she writes.
We love the Boss Lady.
She says it's good with me.
I know that's
right.
But yeah, I'm excited also. I'm excited also. And I like to sit back and be able to watch and see how everything goes. This guy here, Big L, he is awesome. Not only is he a producer, he's now an author. He's going to release a wonderful, wonderful novel, and we're going to be able to hear from him his take on how he's bringing this story to us. It's a whole different take. Like, most people have a lot of different things to talk about, just industry, because they're in the industry. But he has a total different take. He's going to bring us, you know, from the time, from being really small and the things that affected him when he was younger, that, you know, drove him to the streets and put him in a different type of mindset. And then, you know, he ended up, you know, with the music, and the music brought him to a different stage in life. But he has a dynamic story, and it's going to be great when we're able to actually read it in the pages of a book. But he's going to bring all that to us. He just signed Shorty Lowe, another, you know, entertainer, rapper. He's worked with Rick Ross, Gucci Mane, you know, Paul Wall, Pitbull, Lil Wayne. He's worked with a lot of big guys, and he's given them a lot of dynamic pieces of himself that's musical, and probably, you know, other things, of course, because, you know, the producers, they breathe the life into the music. You know, they're all about the beats and the instruments and, you know, how things sound. So, like, when you're able to really go in your car and you're bopping and everything, and you're like, oh, yeah, listen to that Rick Ross. You hear Rick Ross. But then the thing that's really catching you is that music, that snare, that beat, and the producers are the ones behind all of that, you know, making sure that every last tune you hear is fine, you know, so you really, really, really enjoy the music. They're a really big part of, you know, of anyone who sings or plays an instrument, their career. So, yeah, we definitely can't wait. While we're waiting to bring him on, Alicia, if you could please update our listening audience on what we have coming down the pipe, any new books, anything, new ventures, tour dates, anything. Could you please just give us a rundown on what's going on the show so, you know, they can know what's coming out of Right and Royalty, Boss Lady, Aaron Bebo, Bad Apple. Please do that for me.
Absolutely. We got, actually, Boss Lady will be in Charlotte, Miss Nene Capri is coming to you, and that will be April at Books A Million, and that's between the hours of 12 noon and 4 p.m. So if you want to holler at the Boss Lady and you are in the Charlotte area, make sure you head on that way. Also, want to shout out author Serenity Hall. She's the author of Fiendin' and Fiendin' 2. She just dropped her current book, Tears, Endless Tears, which dropped the other day. I started reading now. I didn't have really time to finish. So get that one click popping. That's awesome. It's a real serious type. It talks about abuse and things of that nature. So it's a good read. Also, Aaron Bebo is bringing out I Used to Love Her. And I believe that's April the 11th.
Third.
And you can pre-order April the 3rd.
April 3rd.
April 3rd. That's
okay,
next Thursday.
Okay, you can pre-order. Next Thursday, you can pre-order your copy. I got my copy. Also, we have Miss Roxy. She is bringing out her book, Roxy Reynolds. For all you guys don't know, Roxy Reynolds. She is kicking in the door with her book, Secrets of a Porn Star. You can also pre-order that. That's going to be hot. I believe that she's going to be doing some things with that book. Absolutely.
Great.
Go
ahead.
And
for our summer giveaways, Leisha, could you please update them on the summer giveaways?
And so we do have summer giveaway contests. All you have to do is send your email to writingroyalty@gmail.com, and that will put you into the summer giveaway pot. And we will be giving away great items, some books, some not books, gift cards. Just depends. We've already had maybe three winners so far, three or four winners. So that's going pretty well.
Yes, and we would like to actually pick one this evening as well so that we can also give away a copy of Aaron's new book, I Used to Love Her, which is going to drop on April 3rd. So we definitely would like to do that this evening, and we will make sure we announce that in the book club who that winner is, because people are getting their email addresses in, they're pouring in, and we thank them for their participation, because all summer we have something great. And I just got the chills because me and Aaron talked about something earlier that is going to just blow the reader's mind that's going to take place after the summer, but we're going to be doing some wonderful, wonderful things all summer long leading up to something phenomenal. Like, it's powerful. So, Tony, Aaron is a genius. I just have to point that out. If you're sleeping on Aaron and you think, you know, he be talking kind of slow and he be relaxed and he be chilling, his mind be doing like 5,000, and he's always,
right,
you know, coming up with something innovative. And I'm really, really proud to be on a team with him because we are doing some groundbreaking things. And, you know, I'm happy for the direction that we're all moving in. And we're just going to keep doing, you know, great things over the next couple of months. Shout out to G Street Chronicles, George Sherman Hudson. He's over there working out some wonderful, wonderful things for readers. Today, Cash and I got major distribution through him for Trust No Bitch 1, 2, and 3. So that book will be on shelves all throughout, and they'll be in libraries and everything. So be on the lookout for those three hot titles by Nene Capri and Cash. They'll be
on
the shelf.
We also owe you some congratulations, honey, don't we?
Oh, well,
yes. Nene Capri is the new imprint. Boss Lady Publishing is the new imprint under G Street Chronicles.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you so much. I am very, very happy about that we had that moving. And that is awesome. You know, like I had said in an interview a little while ago, that I want to make sure that my authors have the same opportunities that I have. And I felt like it's a better service, you know, to team them up within a great machine that I already have working, which is G Street Chronicles. And they'll be able to avail themselves of the same amenities that we have under G Street Chronicles. That way their careers can flourish right out of the gate. You know what I'm saying? They'll have, uh-huh. you know, the distribution. They'll be able to be different places. They'll be able to have, you know, real quality brand of work. You know, being a new publisher, I think that I owe that to anyone who is coming into the business to have had teamed up with a powerhouse like G Street. And they'll be able to be guided, and, you know, I'll be able to still continue to learn. You know, while I'm learning, I'll have, you know, some great people in place to make sure that their career is running really good. So I'm happy about that, and I'm proud of that move that I made.
But that darn boss lady, I'm ready to let my pen flow.
You better come on, Tony, because, like, I need that for something. Like, come on. You're talking about when Princess goes to college. I mean, we still have a couple of years.
Right.
I think we could sneak a novel in there.
Absolutely. For all y'all that don't know, Miss Tony, she undercover. She got a pen on the under, and she was trying to hide it. But she can't hide it because we be seeing it. But she got a pen on the undercover. She tried to keep it real low.
But she
got one.
That's awesome.
It was fun. And then I want to also add my two cents to what you said about Bebo, because in the time that I have come to know him, he does drop some powerful jewels, and for that I am very appreciative. So my ears are always tuned and open to what the director with the pen has to say. So I agree with you. That's to you, Bebo.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Y'all
That's
can't
awesome.
Be sleeping on Bebo. He can tell you some things and get you some things in order.
Yes, and don't let him say anything about those side chicks, because if he does, you already know where we're going with that. They will absolutely be winning if it has anything to do with Bebo. But,
and that side chick 101.
As Kiana says, winning!
Shout out to Kiana.
Shout out to her.
Yes, I told you she is way more than a reader. She, on her show, The Ladies of Truth, she always says, I'm Kiana, I'm just a reader. But no, she is way more than a reader. She has a great contribution to the literary game, and she supports authors her whole heart, you know, showing up and at events and buying books and, you know, encouraging others to read. So, and she supports our show, and I appreciate that, and not just our show but our work. And that's good, you know, to have readers coming into the circle of authors and, you know, really helping them out and supporting them. So shout out to her. Shout out, you know, to the Ladies of Truth who come on Tuesday night, right before our Wednesday night show. They're on Tuesday night. So definitely avail yourselves of all of those blog talk shows so that you get to know the authors behind these hot pens. And, you know, tune in and show your support. And they also, you know, do the giveaways and stuff. But it's not just about that. It's about coming and listening to these authors, let you know who they are so that, you know, you get to see that, you know, authors are human and they have lives and they love their readers, and you get to talk about books and different things like that. But tonight I'm happy that we have the opportunity to mesh together one more time hip-hop and music and literature. You know, bringing those three things together, you know, the actual music, which we talked about, the producing and everything, and, you know, bringing that stuff along into literature, because they're pretty much one and the same. Like, they pretty much walk to that same beat. So that is great, you know. And they say, Aaron, that, you know, having a book is the new business card, right? So, like, most people in the industry, it's like, hi, how you doing? I have a book. What do you think about that, Aaron?
I mean, that's the truth. You just look at what's going on. Most of these people's, like, most of the celebrities now, they have the celebrity, they have the little glimpses of their life on TV or through radio or whatever media outlet they got. And then to offer the people more, most of them are offering books.
Right.
Because the people want more of them. And then the only way to get more at such a length of, you know, them not being able to stand still and be standing in front of the camera or the microphone all day is a book.
Right.
So it only makes sense.
Yeah, they're putting out great literature. And that's awesome. Were you going to say something else, Aaron?
No, that wasn't me. I think that was Tony.
Okay.
So that was our other co-host. That's Miss Leisha.
Okay, Leisha.
I was just saying, uh-huh.
we do have a caller on the line, though.
Okay, well, if we have a caller, please take that caller. Let's hear what they have to say.
Good evening, 414-306. You are live.
I'm just listening right now. What's going on, everybody?
Hey, how you doing? Is that the storyteller?
Absolutely, here supporting.
Okay.
Yeah, hold on. Aaron, you got another book coming out before Tell My Casting drops?
I don't. Maybe I Used to Love Her will hit before that. I Used to Love Her will probably hit before Till My Casket Drop, but Till My Casket Drop will be along shortly after that. Like, I Used to Love Her is coming out next Thursday. It'll be available. It's available for pre-order right now.
Man, you working hard. I like that.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm trying. I got to try to stay. We got to do as authors. Got to be having that work. And you got to be trying to stay relevant, you know. So I'm just trying to stay relevant, be seen, have that work, put out quality work, and keep it up. Stay consistent.
Y'all should be in for a good show tonight. Y'all got a good guest, so I'm sit back and listen to it while I'm pecking on what I'm pecking on and just enjoy the show.
Well, thank you so much.
And Mr. Burton actually is the one who introduced us to Big L. So we appreciate that. He also introduced us to Roxy Reynolds. So he is definitely a powerhouse behind the scenes in literature. You know, he writes and he also moves himself around in all types of circles. And we appreciate him introducing these new writers in the game who are trying to get their works seen and heard, and he wants to, you know, make sure that they get highlighted and get appreciated for these new works. So we thank you, Mr. Burgess, for always, you know, contacting us and, you know, getting them on our show so that, you know, they can be highlighted and so that their works can be introduced to our reading world, and we thank you for that.
He is a poet, too. Mr. Burgess got a poetry pen on him. I listened to what you sent me. That was hot. I listen to it. I'm going to post it up on Writing Royalties Wall so everybody else can listen too. Yes, he got some poet in him there. He's very, very, very multi-talented, seriously.
Yeah, that poetry thing is kind of like so in the closet, but I had to get in the studio and because I do have a book called Touched by Two Souls, and the CD was going to be with Sleeveless Emotions. I never finished the CD, so I just dropped a couple tracks and, you know, I got a Reverbination page on that, and, you know, every once in a while I post it. But I seen that Writing Royalty had a poetry day, and I'm like, I'm going through the page, and I'm like, all this great poetry. I said, let me get mine up there.
Absolutely. Every Monday, so we're going to see you on Monday, right?
You'll see me on Monday. I'm sure definitely going to drop a piece in there.
All right.
Y'all, this is Tony. So with your poetry and my pen slowly leaking, we're going to become co-guests on the Writing Royalty Blog Talk. How's that?
Not a problem. Y'all got something coming up with James Gordon, right? GPA, right?
Absolutely. He will be in the clubhouse on tomorrow for Honor That Author Friday. Absolutely. We actually have two authors on tomorrow for Honor That Author Friday because we also have the multi-talented, oh, my God, and the sweetest person in the world. Miss Robinson is in the house, too. So the GPA will be there at 8:30, Miss Robinson at 7.
Okay.
I'll be there.
So it's going to be good.
I'll be there supporting both of them. GPA is his handle stand for greatest poet alive, and I think he earned that name. Hey, when he was in my city, I actually missed his show because I was on the road, but Yeah, GPA, he did all the poetry in my first Chocolate Rose book, probably 8 stories, and he wrote 8 preludes every story. And he did them in both, Chocolate Rose 1 and Chocolate Rose 2. So he's always a person to work with.
That's what's up. Well, that's good. Well, we can't wait to have him in the clubhouse. And we thank you for being in the clubhouse. And we're going to put you back in the cue hole because we're going to be tuning up some music in a second here from UDig Records. And we're going to get it going. So we definitely thank you and continue to listen.
Thank you.
All right. So, Aaron.
Yes.
Give us, you know, we've had this conversation before. If you could just highlight again, you know, with us, how you feel about the combination of music, art, and literature, you know, how they mesh well together, you know, this hip-hop thing, this literary street lit thing, how do you feel how they mesh together?
They all come together, so they ride the same. It's like you ever been to a city that got, like, not a subway, but like a Unirail? It's like mm-hmm. it's like Miami got a Unirail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll just ride on one rail, but it's a train. It's like that's how close hip hop and hip hop fiction is. Like,
okay.
In my books, when I'm writing hip-hop characters or I'm writing hip-hop situations, like, a lot of times as a writer, I bring that out in everything. I'm even down to my character's clothes. Like, I'm describing that because it's there. Some people be like, you know, it's too much description. What are you doing? And I'm like, yo, it's all relevant to the culture.
Right.
You have to know how these people are. How can I have them talking like this or walking like this or having these thoughts if they're not dressing the part, if they're not looking the part, and you don't know where this is coming from.
Right.
So, like, through the language, everything, the expression, the sitting down and writing a book. You know, a lot of rappers now say, I don't write lyrics anymore, but it's the same thing. They're being creative in their head. They have no choice but to outline it, sketch it some kind of way, in a form of where it's like how we write our books. Like, we have to write outlines. A story comes to us in our head and we begin to create. It's just all so relevant. It's the same thing. It's the same.
Yeah.
I started writing because I couldn't express enough in 16 bars of music. Like, I'm like, I need more time to express everything I need to say.
Right.
You know, so.
Crazy. And you remember back in the day, like, when we had, you know, everyone was trying to rap. Like, everybody wanted to have themselves a rhyme. Like, you show up to a party, you like, oh, I swear, I hope they put me on the mic. Like, you had your bars waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, me and my brother, when we were young, we would, like, make up songs and make up rhymes. And we were like, ooh. And then, you know, when you had LL and everybody out there, and you walked around with your boom box, I had a red one. And I used to have it. I used to be walking the streets, and when LL be singing that, I can't live without my radio, man, I just couldn't live without my radio. Like, I couldn't wait. Like, you walking down the street, and you show up in the schoolyard, and, you know, you see the different young dudes. They got the cardboard spread it out, and they're dancing, and they're, you know, breaking and doing their thing. And somebody done sat their boombox down. And the rhythm, the flow, you know, everybody like, oh, shoot, let me say something, let me spit something. And, you know, those creative juices, it just flows all through the community. You know, it's rhythm and music and literature and art all within our communities. And it's sad that sometimes in this day and time it's like a dying breed. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like, a lot of times, you know, with, like, technology and stuff, like, the kids don't have a chance to really get together and rap. And not just like a, right, you know what I'm saying? Because that's a lot of where the origin of that came from, like the rap, you know, together just be rapping, just be talking, just be spitting. That is, like, missing now. Like, it's like, let me text this person and tell them how I feel, you know? There's no
right.
dialogue. And,
right.
you know, you miss that.
But then the other thing, even, like, back in the day, the hip-hop, the rap we had, it had substance. You know what I'm saying? Hip-hop was a culture.
Now we got a lot of fluff and extra stuff and some good music and some not so good. So it definitely has changed over the years and evolved and kind of got away from what we used to have. At least
you know
have
what
good
I think,
music.
You know what I think happened? I think the transition came around the new millennium is the music changed from being about a message and being more about instructional. Like, if you look at the songs that started coming out in the new millennium, like, you started hearing songs like, everybody in the club get tipsy, and shake your tail feather. All that, like, it's like you getting instructed, somebody telling you what to do now, as opposed to a message, or someone telling you what's going on. Like, even when these Biggie Smalls-type rappers and these Tupac rappers, they were telling you what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Other rappers were telling you a message or telling you what was going on around them, the Ice Cubes, the Mobb Deeps, the Scarfaces, all these same type of so-called, you know, hardcore rappers, which are portrayed now as these hardcore rappers, is the guy with the biggest chain or the biggest car and, you know, the guy who's talking like he has it, you know. So it really changed. It went from a message to being instructed. Like, the people are waiting to be instructed, and the music changed. And once you got so much of that going out on the frequency and the airwaves, people were just waiting for that. Like, there was just a time when there was nothing but dance songs going on. You know, like your chicken soup or chicken noodle soup or whatever that song. Like, it was just nothing but dance song after dance song going on. Because people were just waiting for instructions.
And also, Aaron, if I could add to that, I think also the condition also changed. Like, you mind you, we're coming up out the 70s. You're coming up out of Free Love. You're coming up out of Black Power Movement. So that 80s rap, that early 80s and late 80s rap was more so still attached to that consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at Pac and you look at Biggie and you look at people like that, their parents were a part of the struggle. So they came up in an era where the struggle was real. You know what I'm saying? And you had all of this type of this great literature around you. You had poetry around you. You know, you had people going to rallies and pumping their fists in the air. So you had a different consciousness. You had a lot of children who were being given African names or Muslim names, and they had meaning to them. So you had a different type of consciousness, a different type of feel. And now we're in that post crack era, that post I don't care type of era. So you have that in the music. Like, the children nowadays, like me and my husband were talking once, and you know, in North New Jersey, kids just walk into the street. I mean, the light has clearly been green for a very long time. I don't know why you're out there. Like, people, grown-ups, I mean, just right on out in the street, like, and don't even look. Won't even look. Don't even care. Like, I'm crossing this street. Hit me if you feel like it. And what is this mentality? And he was just like, you know, you have to realize that this generation, they don't see a tomorrow. They don't see anything past what's happening right now. Like, they don't see, I'm going to be sitting on the porch, old grandkids, so forth and so on. Like, a lot of them are going by the age of 25. So you have a tomorrow-less society. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't care. You know what I'm saying?
You're right. Uh-huh. And that you is correct. And I got to say, and I said this on different shows before, not on this particular show that we're hosting, but just different shows, that a lot of exactly what you're talking about is exactly what it is, and what it is that we're also in post us being parents. Like, we got the post crack, we got the post, but it's also post us being parents, because we were the ones who got them strung on the Jordans. We were the ones who were like, we're not bringing our kids out. My kid got to have this. We didn't introduce the struggle to our kids, so they never knew it. Because we were living in that fast times, making that fast money.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? So our kids didn't understand struggle. When was it no milk for no cereal? None of that, for real, like none of that wasn't going on for them.
Right.
So they
right.
don't understand it. So when you right. try to talk to this generation, it's kind of hard because they're like, yo, what, Jays? We used to call them Jordan. They done just shortened it up. Like the price tag got bigger, but the name got shorter. Like, yo, Jay, I got Jays.
Right, right.
Back in the days, you had some Jordans. It was serious.
Yeah, and it's expressed in the music. And a lot of times, you know, you can't really say that it's not a message because it's their message. It's their narrative. You know what I'm saying? Every generation has a narrative, and the music that's going on right now is their narrative. And, you know, they come on the scene, and they're able to tell their story. No one can tell their story like them, so we can't really even say that it's not as good as music was when we were young, like they ain't spitting nothing. No, they're spitting their narrative. They're spitting their story. They're telling the what they call existential experience, which means that person's experience, that person's lived experience, and they're telling it, you know, and you can't get angry if you say, well, I ain't talking about nothing. No, they are talking about something, but they're talking about what they know, what they have experienced, and what they have privy to. So I did
see caller,
Mr. Caller. He was in the queue. That is Big L. He was in the queue. He just hit me up because he's calling from a different number. So,
oh, okay. I've seen the number, but I ain't recognize it.
Yes, I didn't recognize either. I saw it. But what we're going to do is we're going to get ready to play one of his
okay,
songs.
Okay, he's back.
He's back in the queue. Okay, great. Okay.
Right.
I can't wait to have him on here. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal gentleman. You're going to learn a lot from him. You're going to learn a lot from his experience and what he's going to share with us. I'm honored, you know, because he's a very, very busy man, and I'm honored that he is going to be on here, and he's going to talk to us about his career, about his upcoming work, his literature that he is about to release on the world, and we're going to learn phenomenal things about him. We're going to get ready to drop one of his beats so we can let the community hear.
Oh, we playing
the
music first? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
His
so
beat?
We bring him
because I didn't want him to disappear again, so I had brought him in. For real.
Well, you can let him in. He can explain to us what he's about to hear, and then we can go ahead and drop that beat so we can hear what he does. Go ahead and let in Big L.
Hey, OG
Big L,
how are you?
Hey, what's good?
How are you?
What's good, brother? How are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, what's good? What's up? What's happening? How y'all doing?
It's good to have you here.
It's doing well.
Man,
we're honored to have you in the clubhouse tonight.
Oh, man.
Yes,
clubhouse
I am.
That's what's up. Let's get it. What's up?
All right. Well, this is the one and only Nene Capri. I'm the one that has been talking to you. Honored to be speaking to you. I know you're a very busy man. I know you have phenomenal, phenomenal things coming down the track. Your resume is bonkers. I mean, it's phenomenal. We're going to allow you to actually share that with our listening audience, and our chat room is filling up. They're pouring in now, and they're listening, and we want you to be able to share that. You sent over two hot tunes. We definitely want to play the first one, then we'll play the second one. You send Big L, Ooh, and then we have Big L, Alaska. Which one you want them to be familiar with first?
The Alaska record, that's Shorty Lowe. That's actually Shorty Lowe. I don't know how it came to you. My engineer shot it over. We just actually shot through some snippets of the record, the two singles that we're running with. And so you'll hear it. The first one is the Alaska record. The artist is Shorty Lowe. And the second one is Ooh, featuring myself. So, yeah, so we're ready to go.
Well, hey, since we got that, that Big L right here, right now, we might as well find out what that Ooh about. So go ahead and drop that beat. He's going to put everybody on hold, and we're going to fall back. Drop that beat, Aaron.
Money, mob, money, mob.
Yes!
Light that shit up, Nick. Smoke some. 100,000 in a row.
All right. We finding out what that ooh was about.
Yeah,
I like that.
You know, snippet. It's a snippet of what we doing. Street anthem. You know, it's gonna go crazy for the summer. You know, just something to heat up the clubs and, you know, so the young guys can kind of something they can relate to and feel. You know what I mean? As they ride in the cars. You know what I mean?
We were just talking about the music and how the music has changed and, you know, how each generation is telling their particular story. We're tying it together with the literature. And because you work so close with a lot of artists, how do you feel about that, you know, with the way the music is each generation's story? How do you feel about that?
I mean, the way I feel about it is it's necessary, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, in the 80s, the rappers, they spoke what they felt, what they was living. The 90s, mm-hmm. the same thing. And mm-hmm. now it's a whole new generation of artists. Let's just, you know, let's face it. It's a whole new wave of things, new culture. But if you go a little further, the new culture has brought back old culture. You know what I mean? Like even the fashion. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? All the young kids is doing is really going backwards in time and taking from the 80s and the 90s and bringing it to the 2000s. And it's like, but they putting their swag to it, so it's necessary. And they doing the same thing with the music. You know, they bring in a whole new sound to music. And I feel like for the hip-hop community, for urban period, like, it's necessary. You know what I mean? Because if it's not, it'll just stay at one point. You know what I mean? It won't evolve. It won't keep growing. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And like you said, it is necessary, because if not, then you're stagnant, you're standing still, and you have no movement and no motion, you know?
Right. I mean, just think about this.
Mm-hmm.
When the Sugar Hill Gang and, mm-hmm. you know, all those artists, you know what I'm saying, when they came out, you know what I mean, Curtis Blow and all them guys, mm-hmm. when they came out and they say, yo, we gonna rap, you know what I mean? It's gonna be called rap, this is what we're gonna do. Do you think that they would realize that 30 years later, that it would have gotten to what it is today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It got to where it is today because it constantly evolved, it constantly changed. You know what I mean? Generation after generation changed it and put their swag to it and put their touch to it. And
right.
that's why, you know what I mean, the hip-hop world is like, it's the number one selling music in the country now. You know what I mean? Like
in the world.
I mean, yeah,
in the world.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the hip-hop world has changed the world in itself to the point that, you know, Barack Obama gets on stage and say, hey, you know, you might want to stay in school because the chance of you becoming a doctor, a lawyer, is greater than you becoming the next Lil Wayne. You know what I mean? So it, you know, it's strong. You know what I mean? Like it's out here. It's out here and it's relevant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's powerful. And you took us through a real huge journey when you talked about music. When you talked about, you know, Curtis Blow and them, like we went from Da Ha till, you know, we went to my Adidas, you know, and now
you got
a Millie from like Lil Wayne, you know. So the generations of music is just phenomenal. Like who would have thought when they, like you said, they were rapping "Don't Push Me" because I'm close to the edge. That next thing you know, you be in the club like Aaron was saying earlier, singing everybody in the club getting tipsy, you know. So
right. And but you know what? And but they talking what they live in. Like they talking mm-hmm. what's mm-hmm. going on now. You know what I'm saying? Like what's in their life right now, what they're experiencing, or you know, sometimes it ain't even what they're experiencing, it's what they see or hear third party, you know what I mean? And
mm-hmm.
and they discussing it. And you know, a lot of times for rap music it's not always, you know, we all know that it's not always truthful. So we don't mm-hmm. want to send the wrong impression and give the wrong impression that
mm-hmm.
this is what these guys is actually doing. They're just really speaking from a narrative to where hey, I may have heard this, or hey, this is what's going on in my neighborhood where I'm from, or mm-hmm. hey, man, I heard this story, and this is how it happened, so let me put it in, you know, in lyrics and to a beat, and you know what I mean, and make it relevant to the listener, so the listener hears it, likes it, and can relate to it, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, and saying that, like, do you feel like, you know, you got these young brothers, you know, they're making a lot of money, they're doing a lot of things. However, at the core of it is that love of the music, that love of the writing, that love of the beat. Do you feel like being able to get in the studio and express yourself is like a therapy, or like even like a diary, like, you know, just writing, just being able to just release their soul? Do you feel like that it has that type of tone over it?
Oh, I definitely feel that it does. And, you know, for me, like right now, I'm in the studio right now. Like, I find peace, you know what I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. to just come to the studio and just, you know, work on different music, whether it be my music or it be other artists that I'm working with, just to bring the best out of that particular song, to bring the best out of that particular record, gives me joy to be able to help be the creator of this music or that sound, because mm-hmm. you never know what song is going to take off and just go through the roof, you know what I mean? Like, it was told mm-hmm. to me at one point by one of my best friends. He passed away, R.P. Pimp C. But Chad mm-hmm. had told me this was in like 2005. He was just like, you know, L, when you spending money and you working records and you trying to create that record, that one record that's going to be number one throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
it's the such thing as good records and hit records. Well, you can't invest your money in good records. You know, good records is just good records. But mm-hmm. a hit record is going to tell you, hey, I'm a hit record. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to tell the world. You're going to know it's a hit record. It's not a good record. It's a hit. And in order to get a hit record, one hit record, you might do 40, 50, 60 good records before you actually get that one hit record. So it's
right.
I can go into it. It ain't just, you know, it ain't just driving Range Rovers and Rolls Royces and Maybachs. You know what I mean? It's you know, hey, you know, it's a lot more to this industry. You know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. you know, 12-hour shifts, day to day, 8 days a week. And it ain't even 8 days in a week. You know what I mean? 25 yeah. hours a day. And it's not even 25 hours in a day. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So,
yeah.
basically, it's an overworked, underprocessed situation that guys have to go in and really, you know, put themselves through to get a hit record. Like, and it's sad because some people work their whole career and don't have no hit records. You know what I mean? I've just been
yeah.
blessed to be around the greats. You know what I mean? Like, I was in the studio with me and Pimp, we would be in the studio sometime at 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, and he just kept going in the booth trying to perfect his perfection. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
and he came out with that smile on his face, and he was like, yo, I got it. It's it. You know what I mean? Like, that was it. Those was the ones. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, yeah. It's a lot to go with it. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. We talked about that the other day. I was like, you know, you can get into the studio, and some folks, they be in there for days. Like, you're like, would you like something to eat? Would you like a shower? Would you like to lay down? Like,
right.
You get in there.
Did you bring a snack today? Look, just take you a snack.
Your people around you be like, well, how you doing? We bring you a Gillette down here because you done grew a full beard and head full of hair.
You're right. Hey, most of the time when I get in,
mm-hmm.
I lock in. I don't move for nothing. Everything that I want comes to me, like, you know what I mean? From food to whatever, like, I, you know, because you just, you might get up and this second, you know what I mean? It's gone. And you forget it. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
not the same energy. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, you just don't have, it's not the same drive. Your voice
mm-hmm.
may differ. People don't even notice, but your voice may differ from Monday to Tuesday. The
mm-hmm.
raspiness, the tone may be different. You know, it's just a lot of components, a lot of elements to go, you know, go to, you know, working in the studio from a professional level. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, it's a lot to go with it. Mm-hmm.
It's the same with literature, you know, for us as authors, and you're going into that path, so you're going to experience, you know, it on that side as well. Like, you sitting there and you're writing a scene, and it's like, please, don't nobody touch me. Don't nobody talk to me. Don't ask me for anything. Like, just
right.
Leave me alone. I got my headphones right. on. I'm writing. I'm laying somebody down. Like, you got to kill them just right now. I can't miss nothing. The sweat got to be pouring. The blood got to be dripping. Like, you got to be in that moment. It's like if somebody messes with you,
right.
you get up. You're like, now, what was I doing? I mean, and when you come
right.
back to it, it's not even the same tone. You're like, I don't even want to kill now. Never mind. Forget it. You know?
Right. You're right.
Okay. And you do have this phenomenal piece of work that you're going to unleash on the reading community. We had an opportunity, you and I, to speak, you know, a little bit about it. Without giving too much away, I would like for you to highlight, you know, what it is, the passion in this piece of art that you're going to give to us and what our readers can look forward to, because our readers are listening. You know, they love the one click. You know, I'm going to make sure that we blow it up when it's ready to drop. But please, you know, just give us, you know, what is your vision and what are you trying to give to the literary community in your work of art that you have coming?
Okay, well, I'm going to touch bases on some of the highlights of the book without just going in depth. But the book is going to be talking about my life, right, and how I got to where I'm at, where I am today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but it's going to start from the fourth grade, you know what I mean, and when I was in, you know, childhood and mm-hmm. elementary school, and I was a very chubby kid, you know, in elementary school. And, you know, I was teased and, you know, as most chubby kids are today, you know what I mean? They go through a lot of trials and tribulations because of their weight or whatever that they're dealing with in life. And sometimes kids don't quite know how to deal with it. But for mm-hmm. me, my book will show how I channeled my aggression the wrong way. It went from me being teased to me becoming the person that was teasing, right? And the
mm-hmm.
older that I got, I became more aggressive. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't one particular person. Because I learned how to get past the teasing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a very sharp tongue. You know what I mean? If you understand what I'm saying, I had a very sharp tongue.
Mm-hmm.
As a young child, you know, I always knew how to talk very well, even now. And so I knew how to get the kids up off me. The kids wasn't the problem. It was society. And this book shows how it's not just one person or one person in particular that's a bully. The book shows how society can somehow or sometimes become a bully. And even today, how society unknowingly bullies overweight people, you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
It's deep, you know what I mean? It is very deep, even down to how you look and view a big person, you know what I mean? And, oh, she shouldn't be wearing that. She's too big for that. You know what I mean? Like, it's deep. It goes into the elements of everyday society. The book is geared toward, you have to understand the beginning of my life to understand the success, right, and how I got to where I am today. The successful music mogul, wasn't always that. I went from, you know, from robberies to drug dealing to you name it. And I did all of these things to try to be aggressive in nature to keep people, I think, from looking at my weight problem that I dealt with as a child. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Go ahead.
I just wanted to stop you because I wanted to ask you a question about the aggressive, like how when you were saying how people be looking at other people and be like, oh, she shouldn't have that on. Like when now coming from where you came from and being where you are now, does it even upset you when you hear someone saying that about someone else now?
Say, man,
like,
let me speak about you.
Hey,
let me tell you something, man. I'm going to be honest with you, man. People in my circle know not even to have conversations about people, big people around me. You know what I mean? Like, it beyond upset me. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't indulge in those conversations, and I try to enlighten people why they shouldn't indulge in those conversations. Listen, you got kids that don't understand who they are as a child that is killing themselves. Because they're being bullied because of how they look. You know what I mean? Like, they don't understand how to say, hey, this is me. I'm going to love me because this is me. This is how God made me. Or, hey, this is me. I need to be on a diet because it's not healthy. I need to try and work toward getting my health, my weight down because it's not healthy. But I love me until that happens. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But hey, man, when you're 13, 14, 15, 12, you know, hey, you don't understand this. You know what I mean? So when the kids are saying, oh, he's so fat, this or that, hey, man, some of these kids are weak-minded and don't understand how to fight back mentally and be strong as a person. And some of them kill themselves, hurt themselves. So
it's
a serious situation. It's not like this is something that you encourage, and that's what I try to explain to people when they go to taking them fat jokes, because you know I don't really go for that. You know what I mean? Like, and my circle don't. You know, my circle have to respect that. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's and I talk to the youth all the time. I got a 501(c). It's called You Did Cares, where we go to the worst of the worst, man, and I reach out, and I don't just talk about weight problem. I talk to the youth, period, in general, and tell them why they need to try and change their life because, you know, at the end of the day, man, that's the future. You know what I mean? Like, without them understanding and having a knowledge, of them having to change their life toward a positive direction, man, we're lost. You know what I mean? We can't carry it. We can't keep it. You know what I mean? We can't keep it going. You know what I mean? We're getting older and older. You know, this is the future. You know what I'm saying? So this is who's going to have it in the next 20 years. So, to answer your question, definitely, man. I definitely don't like those conversations. I don't like when people judge overweight people, whether it be man or woman or whatever the case may be. I don't indulge in those kind of conversations. I don't like it.
I appreciate that, and you know, we need to have that in society. And I like when you spoke on the how society is actually the bully. Like, even, you know, when people talk about racism and different things like that, and some people don't partake in it, but then you have the institutionalized racisms and classisms that are forced, you know, that's forced on young children from really, really small. Like, it's like you get in preschool, you have subconscious children in preschool and kindergarten. Like, honestly, I mean, why would you even need to be subconscious in kindergarten? That's when you're at the most creative, but then you have these teachers and different people who are so affected by the media who will frown upon a child and who will even talk about a child. I can remember being on the schoolyard playing, and because we were very outgoing, we had a lunch aide. She was a lunch aide. She was from the community, and she was standing there talking to the other lunch aide, not really watching the children, and she looked at me and my three friends and said, you see them right there? there ain't going to be nobody, you know, because she had her daughter in cheerleading and different things she had her in. And she was like, yeah, them three ain't going to be nobody. However, within years, her daughter was a crackhead, had five crack babies. All her sons went to jail, and all of us now have college degrees and are doing wonderful, wonderful things. But it's people like that who are very tainting to young children, you know what I'm saying, and will gather other children. I've seen older people in schools who are talking with other children and getting them to go against other children who may have a physical ailment or maybe overweight or maybe too thin or whatever the case may be, because it's not always just against a person whom is heavy. Sometimes a person whom is very thin is also frowned upon or teased or, you know, whatever the case may be.
I used to get the jokes where, you know, my mama, you know, shouts out to my mom, you know, my mom
shout
raising
mom.
That. My Yeah, shouts out to mom, you know. She always kept me fly, you know what I mean? And so, mom's always she kept me fly in school, you know what I mean? Like, I was a fat fly kid, right? And so I would get these kind of jokes. Oh, he's cute to be fat, you know what I mean? And I didn't understand it back then, you know what I mean? But I'm like, what do you mean cute to be fat, you know what I mean? So so fat people are naturally ugly then, basically. Is that what you're saying? You know what I mean? So, so you know, it starts with that, you know what I mean, and then it gets deeper, you know what I mean, and then, you know, the guys may see, well, he got the new Jordans on, they ain't got the new Jordans on. I'm talking about as a kid, and he think he's something because he got the new Jordan, he's still fat, you know what I mean. Oh, this is the stuff that I dealt with in school, but, you know, it never, you know, for me, it just only made me more aggressive because, yeah, I was fat, you know what I mean? But I wasn't no girl, you know what I mean? Like, if mama didn't raise no girl, she raised a boy. So I stayed fighting, and then that became a bad situation, you know what I mean? Like, it became an aggressive situation that I didn't quite know how to deal with until later learning who I was as a person. You know what I mean? So you know, you have to just, it's a lesson. You have to go through something to understand who you are as a person and learn to love yourself as a person, regardless of how you look. You know what I mean? So yeah, you know, it's a great deal. It's a great, you know, yeah, it's a serious situation in the world. Like, you know what I mean? You got kids being teased every day, being bullied every day. And some of these kids, unfortunately, is being bullied to the point where they just go try to commit suicide or try to harm themselves because they don't know how to deal with it. They don't want to deal with it anymore. And it's serious. I really, you know, suggest that everybody be more aware of what's going on in the world, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
I got a question for you, Big L.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Now that you're older, and you have, you can look back kind of on those situations, and you know a little bit more now than you did then. Did you notice that a lot of that could have been a little jealousy because you said your mom, even though you were fat, your mama kept you fly, and you had the Jordans, and they didn't have the Jordans. So what could a lot of that teasing have been from a lot of jealousy coming from the kids being jealous of the fact that your mama may take care of you, and they mama may not take care of them. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a lot of jealousy going on. It was, it's still jealousy right now today. You know what I mean? you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was a lot of jealousy. Like, I'll never forget. I was on a plane, and when I fly first class, you know, and that's the only way I fly. That ain't because I prefer to fly first class just the seats are bigger and more comfortable and I can afford it. So, you know, at one point in my life, you know what I mean, I didn't fly. So when I first started flying, I was introduced to flying first class. They said, listen, this is going to be more comfortable for you. You know what I mean? This is where, You know, this is where all the business people are at, which, you know, now, you know, the whole plane is filled with whomever, you know what I mean? But this is just how it was taught to me. So I kind of navigated to that direction of flying. Mm-hmm. So I remember, like, yesterday, I get on a plane, I'm flying Delta. Ticket was $1,250. I was flying from Miami to Houston, Texas. And the stewardess came up to me and said, oh, you're going to need a seatbelt extension. Now, as if I didn't know I needed a seatbelt extension, right? But she made it so obvious, you know what I mean? Like, she just came to me, like, and it was like a joke. Then I had nodded back, and she was serving dinner on the plane, and needless to say, she didn't ask me if I wanted dinner or whatnot. So, you know, long story, and I didn't even want dinner, but the point is, that's what I paid for, you know what I mean? She took it upon herself to try and, I don't know what she was trying to do, or she was trying to prove a point that, hey, you, this is one meal you don't need, or whatever the case may be, but I didn't like it, and I kind of let her add it on a plane. And I reported her because, you know, I spent my $1,250 like everybody else that was sitting in them three rows. And I want all the amenities to go with spending $1,250 as opposed to $300. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So sometimes it's not about the size, because there's a lot of people that you can joke at. But what do you gain from joking about somebody else? I mean, you know what I mean? You're not perfect just because you're not fat, or you're not short, or you're not tall, or you're not skinny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're who you are. You know what I mean? Like, and today's society, you got women that change their appearance, and you know, money can change the appearance of almost anybody today in today's time. You know what I mean? And some things just, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, the world has gotten so close-knit to where it's all about how a person looks now. You know what I mean? Like, even with artistry, well, you listen to the music, and then the next thing, how does she look? You know, people bring artists to me all the time. And I find myself, even now, I be having to check myself, because they come to me, well, man, I got a finger for you, man. She bad. And I hear the music, and now the next thing, how she look? You know what I mean? And it ain't because I care about how this person looks or how he looks. It's just the way the industry is designed and set up now, it's like they don't really, it's like a certain look that they want. It's a certain age that they want. It's a certain, you know what I mean? It's kind of awkward, you know what I mean? It's a lot of politics in the industry. A lot of politics.
Yeah, and a lot of people fall through the cracks because of that. People who are very, very talented, but they don't fit the look, so therefore they get thrown to the wayside. And you'll see somebody who does have the look, but you don't know why it is that they are singing or rapping or whatever it is that they're doing.
Right.
They got their little picture that people are listening to them, like, okay, go ahead, say the lines. And they're looking at the picture, they're like, nope, you can't say the lines because you don't look like this cookie cutter situation that we want for this particular thing. But we have a caller in the queue. We have a 570, Aaron. They're waiting to get in and have an opinion on this topic. Could you please bring in 570? Do you mind, Big L? Can we bring in a caller?
Go ahead.
Hello?
570-540. Hey. You are live. Good evening.
Hello.
Welcome,
this is Keisha. How's everybody doing?
Hi,
hey,
Keisha.
What's
How
going on,
you?
Keisha?
Nothing much. Listen to the show. A good show tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do have a question. I heard what Big L was saying. Do he think that when a man is bigger, like Biggie Smalls, you see how he was celebrated, and he still got the woman. But if you have a woman that's big, either she had to be funny and laughing at herself. She can't be sexy, though. That's not going to work for her. So
right.
That's what I'm looking at. Like, if you could be big and you're a man, it's acceptable. You might talk about it. You're still going to get the flyest girl. But if you was a woman, you can't be big. That's not going to work for you.
It's not going to work for who? What do you mean? For society? For the, what you saying?
Yeah,
for society?
Yeah, for the size. Yeah.
yeah, I agree. To, I mean, you know, that's why a lot of people look at it, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's a lot of people where their mind goes beyond the appearance of an individual, you know what I mean? Some people won't look at that lady for just, oh, she's overweight, you know what I mean? She ain't worth dealing with, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, she may have other elements to go with, you know, that makes her who she is as a person, you know what I mean?
I'm thinking about Kelly Price's, I'm Monique. Like, Kelly Price, she lost all that weight, but it seems like she lost her voice.
Let me say this to you, right? First and foremost, you know what I mean? I done fought with this weight problem all my life, still struggle with it today, right? Although I'm a lot smaller than where I started, you know what I mean? But being overweight is just not healthy. That's the bottom line, you know what I mean? Now, how we deal with that issue is one thing, but it's not healthy. So we can make it as cool as we want to make it, whether we be male or female. We can make it as cool as we want to. I hear a lot of
yes,
yeah,
I got a background.
Hello.
Yeah, we need to take down some background music. It's a radio or something in the background. We want to make sure everybody can hear. Please keep down your TV or radio. Okay.
Yeah, so basically, you know what I'm saying, you know, it's not healthy, you know what I mean? So, you know, sometimes big people, we have something that keeps the eye off of us. We know how to do very good that keeps the eye off of us. We either know how to be funny, we know how to be rude, you know what I mean? We know how to do something very well to keep the person there, oh, he's too fat, or oh, she's too fat, you know. And at the end of the day, I think it boils down to the fact that you don't need anyone to tell you that you're okay, because somebody out there in the world is gonna love you for you being who you are, for you looking how you look, period. You know what I mean? And whoever don't like it, tell me, kick rock. You know what I mean? They the one need to keep it moving, not you. You who you right. are. You dealing with your problem. What problem do they have that they're not dealing with? And then be the questions. You know what I mean? And that's some of the things that you know, I'm gonna talk about in my upcoming book. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And
yeah,
that's gonna be really good.
That up.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I didn't hear you. What you say?
Go ahead, Lisha.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, I don't think society itself, they don't. You have some people that may understand, but it doesn't matter if you're really big or you just need to lose 5 or 10 pounds. When you're losing weight, it's a life change. You have to change things in your life. It's not just, oh, stop eating. You have to change a lot of things that you do, the places you go, the things you have in the cabinets, the way in which you eat, because a lot of times it's that you may not be eating enough. You may not be eating enough to keep your blood sugar level leveled out, or, you know, it's something that you're doing within your lifestyle. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. It's not just get on a treadmill and don't eat. It's a lifestyle change. You are changing everything from the inside to the outside, and I don't think they understand that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Yeah, we you know, it's a you know, it's a struggle, but you know, everything is struggle. Life's a struggle. You know, my cousin just lost his life, you know, a few days ago. Somebody came to the window and shot him in the head twice, you know what I mean? We don't know why. We don't know what happened, and you know, I've been dealing with a lot this week, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, at the end of the day, life in itself is a struggle. You know, it ain't all a glitz and glamour, although we would love for it to be just about the up, but it's not about the up. It's always it's the down. You got to go through the down to understand and appreciate being up. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people in life dealing with problems right now that they ain't going to be able to get through. You know, mm-hmm. somebody right mm-hmm. now that's fat and overweight and disgusted with their life and tired of being called fat is going to jump off the roof and kill themselves. Mm-hmm. Going to mm-hmm. take the whole bottle of pills, going to eat the gun. You know what I mean? They're going to eat the bullet tonight, right yeah. now. In the world, do you understand what I'm saying? So,
yes.
you know, it's some fat kid, some chubby kid don't want to go to school tomorrow. You know what I mean? Because today they was called fat. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. real life. You know what I mean? It's real life. And sometimes people don't deal with it until it hit them. Like right now, people that follow me, because I'm an icon, I'm a person that, you know what I mean, people are looking at as being, oh, he's this music mogul. He drives Rolls Royces every day and blah, 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 blah. They don't understand my history. They don't understand that this guy has once was once a person that used to probably rob people for a living just so they, you know what I mean, wouldn't look at him as being a target. You understand what I'm saying? You know, mm-hmm. I don't do it all. I done been to prison. I done... You know, and it's not nothing to glorify me being who I was. It's something to make a person understand that, hey, if I went through all of these stressful things, all these different aggressions in life, all these different transitions to becoming who I am today, and I made it, right? I made it out. I made it. I made it through the prison stint. I made it through the bullying. I made it through me being looked at as a negative individual. I made it out. Now, you know, I'm on the other side, and I'm saying, hey, come on. If I can show you that I made it out, you know, anybody can make it out. You can't sit back. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In my city, you know, I mean, man, them folks going crazy up there. The youth is going nuts. It right. started when I was there, you know. But it's crazy. Like, they don't – it's like they trying to live too fast. And I understand when you live fast, you die young. You die early.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And you know, these kids, you know, between 17 and 23 getting hit with football numbers, you know, going yeah. to the court to judge 40 years, life 50 years, life, you know, 30 years, life, you know what I mean?
150 years. I don't know how you could even do, I mean, how can you do 150 years? Like, honestly, they going to prison knowing I ain't never coming out.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you a story real quick. I ain't going to waste too much time, but this needs
it's
to be
your time. You
I'm in prison. This was in I was in prison back in 1996, and I'm in this place. It's called Dodge Correctional Institution. It's a maximum prison, right? It's in Walpine, Wisconsin, right? And I'm in this prison, and you know I'm going on. You know we locked down 23 hours a day, right? And I'm hearing this little kid. He couldn't have been no more than, I don't know, 20 years old or something, right? So, you know, it's so hot in the cell that the floor is sweat. Like, it looks like it's been raining inside the prison. It's how hot it is in the building, right? The floor is literally sweat. They got big fans that keep the floors dry because it's so hot in this prison, right? So one night, you know, about 2, 3 in the morning, man, I just wake up, you know what I mean, to some screaming. So my Shelly just go to screaming, you know what I mean? He's screaming, and he's just running his head into the wall, to the brick wall. And I grab him like, yo, what's going on? And he's just screaming, and he's screaming, and he's screaming. And by then, you know, the guards done popped the lock, cut the lights on. You know what I mean? They thinking we in there fighting, but I'm trying to restrain little dude from hurting himself. He bleeding, he going crazy, screaming, he crying. And, hey, listen, I had been in there about 7 months already, and just this one day, you just wake up in the middle of the night and just go crazy. Yo, I ain't never going home. He ain't never going home. He got life. He got natural life. Yo, I ain't never going home. It took him 6 months to realize he was never going home. So the next day, you know, I asked one of the old heads on the pod. I said, yo, because they took him out of there and put him in solitary, you know, kind of watching. And the next day I asked one of the old heads, you know, what was he in there for and how much time he had. Cause, you know, that's one of the jail's rules. Don't really ask nobody how much time they got and what they in there for. And the one of the old heads was like, man, he got life. He shot an old lady coming out of Popeye's. He tried to rob her. The old lady didn't want to give him her purse, and he shot her and killed the old lady. And for that split second, I could have passed judgment on that kid, right? But I chose to pray for him, you know what I mean, because I had gotten to know the kid for the little 6 months I was in there with him. And, you know, I don't want to justify him doing what he did, because you can never justify anyone doing anything wrong. You know what I mean? You have to deal with your issue and be held accountable as an individual, as an adult. But at the same time, when I met him, he was about 20 years old. I'm thinking realistically, he probably did this when, you know, probably when he was about 18 years old, 19 years old, right? Just the duration of court proceedings. I give him a year sitting in the county jail. So realistically, probably about 17, 18 years old, this kid then committed a murder, and he'll never get a second chance. You know what I mean? So, in fact, it's two lives lost. It's the older lady. Her life got taken. Her life got taken, you know, carelessly. You know what I mean? She's just going to get some chicken, going about her regular routine in the day, and she don't want to give her purse up. She don't need to give her purse up. She don't want to give it up. This is her purse. This is her possession. She shouldn't have to. And this kid that don't know no better, right, that don't understand what he about to do, takes her life. Now it's two people gone. Needless to say, it's two black people gone. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because one ain't both of them ain't coming back, whether you, however you look at it.
Right.
And this prison system, we supposed to be in the world the minority. That's what they tell us. But you know what I mean? In the prison system, we're the majority.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's more African Americans in the prison than anything. You know what I mean? But in the world, we're the minority. You know what I mean? It's just a lot of politics to it, but you know, that's why I try to talk to the youth and try to enlighten them and encourage them, you know what I mean, and change their life. A lot of kids look up to me because of who I am, but I try to give them some game, as I call it, to keep them on the right track, because they feel like in order to get money, they got to go commit a crime. In order to be slick, they got to pop molly or smoke weed. You know what I'm saying? You know, to be a gangster, you got to keep a pistol on. You got to tote a gun, you know.
Right.
But, you know, in reality, you know, I done seen more people get killed and shot with guns in their possession. You know what I mean? I mean, just being honest, I mean, my cousin, you know, God bless the dead, they came to this man's house and killed him, shot five times through the window. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't care. It could have been 10 guns in the house. They wouldn't have cared. You know what I mean? Like, whoever came to do what they wanted to do, and they did it. And they got out of there.
That's the crazy thing about it.
That's what the world has become. It's like these folks nowadays, they just don't care. Whatever they feel like they got to do, they going to go out and do it, because that's what they own. And they may not even think that, you know, man, I might kill this guy today, but what if I get caught tomorrow? Now my life is gone. Because they're going to lay you down. They're going to give it to you. They're going to give you the whole book. You know?
And we were talking about that before you came on, and I was giving the analogy how it, with something as small as people crossing the street nowadays, it's like they don't look, they don't care. The light has clearly been green forever, and they do it in such a careless manner, and, you know, it's like they don't see a future. It's like they don't see getting past their tomorrows or getting past their problems. You like, you get past your problems, but in that situation, they don't see getting past their problems or living to get through that issue. We talked about the people who right now, they're not even going to live to get through the actual problem that it is that they're having, because they don't even see that society is built for them. The way society is built, we talked about the images and the different things that are portrayed, they don't fit that bill. They're not rich. They're not white. They're not, you know, beautiful, whatever it is that they, that society holds as the key character, that this is what you have to be to success, to be successful. This is what you have to be accepted. They're the total opposite. And they don't see themselves ever getting there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, whatever, you know, ball out. You know, I'm just going to do whatever it is I can do within these moments.
Right.
Or to be happy, or whatever it is, whether it's, you know, violent, whether it's, you know, abuse of drugs, abuse of alcohol, you know, whatever it is, I'm just going to do it because I don't fit in this world anyway. So even if I'm not here, no one's affected. You know what I'm saying? But in actuality, everybody is affected because you're killing
everybody
out generations.
Yeah, everybody. Hey, listen, everybody is affected. I used to be that way, though, Mimi. Man, just didn't care, you know what I mean? Like, I remember my mama telling me, she said, I got an older brother and an older sister, and I know my sister listening right now. Shouts out to Shell. But anyway, I remember my mama, you know what I'm saying? Hey, I took two life insurance policies out on you. I'm like, damn, mama, why you got two policies out on me? And you know what I mean? Her response was, how you living? You know, this is how you living. You ain't living right. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know when I'm going to have to bury you. You know what I mean? And that kind of was, that was a mouthful, man. I'm like, man, you know what I done to get two life insurance? I feel special. Should I feel special? Hell no.
I'm honored. Thank you, Mama. I'm honored.
Yeah, you know, I'm honored to add two life policies. Nah, that ain't nothing to be feeling special about. That's something to wake you up about.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't until I got to prison and went through all of what I went through as a young man to see, hey, man, this ain't where I want to be in life. I want to be doing something else with my life, man. You know, I want to be able to experience life outside of prison. You know what I mean?
I want to live.
Yeah,
I want to live.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. Because sometimes, you know, when you in the mix, you know, you just don't see it. You know, folks be the first thing they say, well, man, I gotta feed my kid, or man, I gotta eat. Man, listen. You that's true. You gotta feed your kids. You gotta eat. But man, if you're in the penitentiary, man, you can't feed them no way, man. So what you gonna do, man? You know what I'm saying? You willing to give your freedom up trying to feed your kids? Cause you're in the penitentiary, you can't feed them no way.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So that ain't no excuse. That ain't no good reasoning for why you in the streets. You know what I mean? And this is what these cats don't understand. Is hey man, you can be slick, you can be a boss, you can be everything that you're trying to be in life, you can be successful without being in the streets. You ain't got to live that, you know what I mean? You can talk about that without living that, you know what I'm saying? And you can, you know, they not, when you go to the car lot, right? So, what are they asking you? How much money do you have? Or are they asking you how do you plan on paying for this? You
money,
know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because if you come in there with a duffel bag full of money, man, you going to the penitentiary. They don't want the money that bad. You know what I'm saying? It ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, it's not about your sales, not about your car being bought. It's about their business, their brand, their establishment that's much bigger than your wrongdoing, you wanting to do wrong, you know what I mean? And it go deep, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's about living, you know what I mean? But like I said, life is a struggle, life is a lesson, and you know, we almost learn from the lessons of life. You know, we got to keep moving and keep striving to become who we are as adults. You know.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, and we do have another caller with their hand up. Do you mind taking another call, Big L?
Yeah, let's get it.
Okay, we got that 404-457. They're in the queue. Aaron, can we bring them on?
Welcome
yes,
to the clubhouse.
They are now live.
Welcome
hello,
to the clubhouse.
404-457.
They get shy.
What's your name?
Sometimes they get shy. Maybe they just want to listen. Put them back on hold. They probably just want to listen.
So let's get it.
We could
go
to
414.
Okay, bring 414
306.
In. 306. We got a 414 caller in.
Yes,
yeah.
We do.
You know who the 414 is?
I sure don't, but I can about imagine. Let me hear what.
Welcome to the clubhouse. What's your name and where you calling from?
Oh, yeah,
who is this?
What's going on?
Who you think it is?
I can't hear you. Who is this? Ghetto Soprano.
Man, what's up, storyteller? What's up, my brother?
What's going on?
Hey, how you doing, bro?
Sitting back listening to you getting in with my peoples, man. I was listening to I wanted to touch on one thing. That was a good question that Aaron had raised. And when he raised that question, I was thinking about this one situation. One day when you had picked me up and we was sitting in the studio and we was jamming, it was like, I was like, what's wrong? And he was like, man, I went by my friend's house last night. And her daughter, she just kept feeding her daughter. And I'm like, hold on, what is you doing? You can't keep feeding this girl. So I know how that made you feel, and I know how serious you are about people, you know, not doing what they do to take care of themselves. And then, you know, even you watch the parent and, you know, enabling her daughter because that was the way she was keeping her daughter quiet. By putting food in her mouth. And I, you know, that kind of like, to me, let me know that, you know, that really hurt your feelings to see that.
Yeah, because that's where it started. That's where it started with me, you know, and sometimes as adults, we all do that. We pacify our kids with candy and cupcakes and things to keep them quiet or to just pacify them in general. And we really aid in the problem of these kids becoming obese and getting into a situation when they're in school, they're being teased, and it's just we're creating a situation, man, of 12 years of issues with this child. You know, this child's gonna be in school for 12 years, and you can either help your child be in school for 12 years comfortably, or you can help your child be in school and be rough on them. You know what I mean? Like they fighting every day, they arguing every day, they being joked about every day, and they going through it because, you know what I mean? Like you unconsciously you helping this child with the problem that you know they already have. You already know that there's a weight problem there. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's best to sit down and give them education on how to change that problem, how to come back from that issue and do the right thing, because being overweight is not healthy. It's just not healthy at all, man. And it's not about how you look and how people view you. It's just not healthy. And, you know, it just needs to be more understanding about that topic, because a lot of people really don't understand. They just quick to say, oh, he's fat or she's fat or she don't look right. She way too big to be wearing that dress. You know, ugh, look at her legs touching or whatever the case. you know, you hear some crazy stuff, man. I be sitting back like, damn, you know, I'm sitting right here, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, mm-hmm. Why you saying that? Like, what you think about me then? You know what
right,
I mean? You're
right.
Saying all that about them. You can't think the world about me. You in my face praising me, but, hey, man, I'm fat too, though. So what you think about me? You know what
right.
I mean? But, oh, you forgot I was fat because it's a brand-new Rolls Royce out front. You know, you
right,
oh,
okay. Right.
Oh, I can get mm-hmm. you a record deal. You forgot I was fat. Nah, I'm still fat, though. I'm still working at it. You know
right.
what I mean? But it's crazy. The world is so contradicted, man. It's a mess. But I definitely concur with that story, man. And but we all sometimes we do that, man, unconsciously knowing, man, that we're doing the wrong thing. And
yeah.
I think we need to be more aware. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Struggling to do better and to you know be able to get yourself at that healthy weight, you know, where you have everything in the right way that you wanted to be for your health, and you still carry the name Big L. Is that a humbling thing for you, like being able to, you know that you're working towards this and still having a
Man,
name is a identified with being big?
Believe that, you know, I always say, you know, a lot of people say, man, you ain't going to be BL no more. I done lost over 200 pounds. I'm still working, right? And
right.
I feel like, you know, that's who I am, you know, as an individual. You know, like, I'm going to stay who I am. And at some point the name may change. But for right now, you know, I'm comfortable in saying I'm who I am.
Right.
You know, in my life right now, I'm comfortable. I can say, you know, I'm Big L, and a lot more people want to become Big L. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, you know, I don't have to run from being Big L no more. I used to run from that. Now it's like, man, I'm who I am, and, you know, it's people that trying to, it's so many fake Instagram pages and people, you know what I'm saying, trying to be me. It's like, man, it's kind of, at some point, it becomes kind of, you know, it's kind of crazy, but then it's flattering at the same time because these folks want to follow what they see to be success. But sometimes, you know, you have to teach them a little bit of your history so they can understand your presence. You know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we would like to say, go ahead, Aaron.
Can I ask a question about the music?
Yes, that's where I was going.
I'm a music fanatic. I got questions about the music. I'm definitely into all the other things you're speaking about as well. But I ain't gonna lie, I'm a fan of music. I want to know how you got into, you know, how did your life turn towards going towards the music industry, and how you got involved with some of the, you know, major artists you got involved with, because you wasn't, like you said, big. It was big. Everything was big. It wasn't nothing small or nothing. So I'd like to know how you got into that and what brought you in that direction.
Well, I always had an ear for music, man. Like, I always loved music, even when I was younger. And so when I moved to Florida, man, I was involved with some guy. I was involved with some individuals, man, that was working with an artist named Crystal. She was a Latino singer, and I had some prior connections at Atlantic, which wasn't the artistry. Let me go back. Years before that, I was dealing with a label called Tommy Boy. You probably heard of that.
I know about Tommy Boy.
Right.
They had Queen Latifah.
Right.
I know.
Right. So they went under, you know what I mean? And some of the execs from Tommy Boy had shifted over to Atlantic. So, you know, I got a chance to get into the offices of Atlantic and, you know, just kind of rekindle some relationships. And like I said, me and Pimp C, we were like brothers, man, and we always worked closely on different situations and different ideas. And you know, I just started working my the politics of the whole business. And then I met a guy named Bob Pickering that owned a distribution company by the name of Orphan Distribution. And they were located out of Minnesota. And so Bob Pickering is the gentleman that kind of taught me the distribution business, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he taught me how, you know, how the distributors is the first people to get the checks. You know, mm-hmm. distributors get the checks before the artists get the checks, you know what I mean? And so I was intrigued. I wanted to learn that business. I wanted to know, like, listen, man, how do you set up a one sheet? How do you set up a project and pick a release date? And how do you? And, you know, sometime, man, when it's our own culture, we won't get a game up. Because we wasn't born with a silver spoon, so we feel like, okay, well, I know something she don't know, so I ain't telling. You know what I mean? Because this how I'm eating, you know what I mean? So it took this gentleman, he's a Caucasian, and he didn't think of it like that. He gave me the game. He gave me the whole distribution game in a nutshell. I went through him with a project by the name, an artist by the name of Young Stally, and
Is he from Cleveland?
No, not that Stally. He's from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And the guy Bob Pickering gave me a $15,000 advance, $15,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, $15,000, man. Like, I got damn near $75,000 out of my pocket tied into this project. You know, I got some speed on it, Chameleon, and at the time, it's 2005, so at the time, Houston had it, you know what I mean? Everybody out of Houston, from Paul Wall to Lil Kiki to Chameleon, they was hot, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I had everybody on this boy project, and he said, this man, give me $15,000. I said, man, is that how this business works? He said, no, this ain't how this business works. I'm going to give you the whole layout on how you're going to get your money. So he taught me. We started with that project. Moving forward, I ended up going to him through another project that we did by another artist by the name of Baby Drew, and we did a $100,000 budget. And just going based on the artist, the budgets would fluctuate. So the next year, I came at him, and I kind of felt like, you know, I was a fast learner. And I said, well, hey, man, how much is your company worth? And, you know, we went into, you know, what the company was worth. And long story short, I ended up buying 51% of the company. And which I still own today. And so, you know, that's my thing. Like, you know, the distribution is what I do. That's what I learned how to do. And the record label side of it is kind of – the record label side of things is easy. The distribution game is a little tricky because you have to learn how to set up projects. You have to set up these one sheets. You got to learn how to deal with these different retailers. These different retail outlets, whether it be iTunes or Best Buy, you have to create these relationships because you know, music fluctuates. It go from hearts. It came from CDs to everything is really digital now. Everybody can hear everything off of iTunes, Amazon.
Right.
You know what I mean? They don't want no CDs in the car. They want an auxiliary cord. You know what I mean?
I'll take what I tell you. I'm old school. I want to touch it. I feel like if it's in my phone or something, I might lose it. I want to touch the CD. I even listen to the tape play. You know, I'm like, what?
Hey, man, to answer your question, I learned the business. I learned how the majors work. I do work with Atlantic. I just pick and choose the projects that I really shift over there, you know, because for the most part, you know, Atlantic is looking for a situation that's already up and rolling. And I know that you have to create a situation for them to really become a part of that situation. They want to see you work radio. They want to see you. They want to see BDS and media-based spins. You know what I mean? They want to see some sound scans. They want to see that you are working as a self-sufficient label or a self-sufficient artist prior to them becoming involved. And that is the projects, and those are the artists that normally make it with record labels, major record labels, that is.
Okay.
Danielle, I have a question. This is Tony. I can finally chime in.
Oh, go ahead. Okay.
Was there anything in particular in your life that was going on other than you wanting to be the first to get a check that geared you towards what you're doing?
In the music
Not you
business,
personally getting it, yes.
Now, say it again. I didn't quite hear you.
Okay. Was there anything going on in your life other than you hearing or seeing the directors getting the first check that, you know, pushed you in the direction that you're going or that you went?
I mean, just the love of the game, you know, the love of the music, the love of being able to take an artist from ground zero and get them to where they, you know, selling music and making money. You know, just the drive of creating. You know what I mean? Like, but like everything, you have to be able to create and get paid for you creating. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And sometimes, you know, you have people that love what they do, right? But they don't understand business. They don't want to be paid for what they do. They don't want to be paid for their knowledge. I'm just not an individual. You know what I mean? Like, I need to be paid for what I know, because I know when you get to the major label, right, you can't even talk to these people without having all your T's crossed and your I's dotted. You know what I mean? So for independent labels, you know, sometimes artists feel like, well, we could just go ring Big L doorbell. No, you can't just ring my doorbell. You can't just pop up at my place of business.
Don't
you know what I mean?
Come over
no.
here.
No, you can't do that. You know what I mean? Like, this is a business, and not to mention, it's a business that's attached to a multi-billion-dollar business, which is Warner. So you can't. Do you think Atlantic is just giving everybody pressing and distribution deals? No, no.
Mm-hmm.
I had to show these people a regimen. I had to show these people, you know, a long list of me being able to take projects and make money off these projects. You know what
right.
I mean? And in order for them to say, okay, L, here is a budget. Work it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, but not giving that opportunity
right.
to everybody or anybody. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to
mm-hmm.
do something that the major listen, these folks is worth billions. So,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not worth no billions, you know what I mean? So why am I going to start doing things that they're not even doing? You know what
right.
I mean? How am I going to create
uh-huh.
an advance for you that you can't even get from a major label? You want $1 million from me, but you can't even get $500,000 from the label. That's crazy.
right.
It don't make sense.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you another question, Big Al.
Go ahead.
What would be... If you, out of all the projects you worked on and that you dealt with, what would be the one project that had a level of success that you knew with that you had to actually sell to the label? Like, you almost had to force them to take it, and then you was like, look, I told you.
which project? I can't answer that completely because most of these projects are still out, and I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't want to cross any barriers. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
You know what I mean? If I answered it
right.
correctly. But I will say this. I'm going to give you this clarification. The hardest project that I have never given up on for fighting for is this Pimp C project. And this is what happened, right? Everybody on the phone know who Pimp C is, UGK, right?
Uh-huh.
But we lost Chad Butler in 2007. Okay, so listen, prior to that, me and Chad we did a lot of music. We recorded a lot of music. And I had clearances on all of this music. I went through Jive. Barry Wise was at Jive, CEO at Jive at the time. We got everything cleared. This was like, you know, this was real business, right? And so when he passed, and I'm going to speak on this, you know, because I feel like I want to speak on this. And, you know, unfortunately, his mom just passed a year ago. So, you know, if she was here, she'd be on the phone with me, seconding my motion. But anyway, everybody, when Pimp died, everybody started taking, like most people, most, you know, hey, man, this was mine. He did this, he did that. Well, I had a whole entire project on Pimp C, right? I had signatures from Barry Wise. I had signatures from Pimp C. I had signatures from Pimp's manager, Rick Martin, was the manager at the time, right? When he died and I went to release the music, I had to deal with so much scrutiny. I had to deal with so much problem. So many, I forgot. I didn't remember saying that. I don't remember saying this. The estate. I'm going to say the estate, right? But Pimp was married, so we know what the estate meant, right, without me putting people under the bus, right? I had to deal with the estate because he was married. And these people that while Pimp was living, I never even knew. You know what I mean? I knew I knew he was married, but I never met his wife. You know what I mean? So I feel like, you know what I mean, when it came time for me to release this music, that I have paperwork and documentation from not only Pimp, but the major label, Jive Records, you giving me problems. And it was like, it went 3 long years, you know what I mean? And I fought year after year after year until I finally was able to release the music. And the CD is called You Dig Records Presents Pimp C, the final compilation. And it wasn't originally named that. It was Pimp C, the final word, right? And I had to rename it. I had to size the names down. I had to, you know, it was just a lot of scrutiny that I went through, and I had to change just to put this work of art out. And you know, when the project went up, man, I might have sold 100,000 units the first week, independently. You know what I mean? I mean, this is independent money where I'm not chopping up my money with nobody. I own this product. You know what I mean? This product is being sold on iTunes for $13. I'm taking off $10. I'm getting 90% of my proceeds. I own my music. You know what I mean? So for me, you know what I mean? Yeah, it took me three years to put it out, but it's a very successful project, and it's still successful because you know what? Any diehard UGK fans, any diehard Pimp C fans, there is no more music on Pimp C. So what you going to do is you're in your catalog, you got to go buy the music. You know what I mean? But, man, before I could get to that, oh, man, I went through it, man. Folks ceasing to assist in my project, shutting me down, telling me I didn't have a right, and you know, it's needless to say I did have a right because the project is out everywhere. It's on iTunes. And it was a lot more projects the same way, but I can't really speak on them because the artist is here, and, you know, it's just politics about the business, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, nah, I could dig it. We're going to try to take this 404 again. I see they pop back up.
Okay.
Hello?
4-4-5-4-5-7.
Welcome to the clubhouse.
Hello, can you
hear
me?
What's your name?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, my name is Lynn Tate, and I just wanted to say hi to Big L.
Oh.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Big L. Lynn.
What's up?
Lynn Tate.
Yeah, this is Lynn Tate.
Hey, salute, Lynn Tate. What's up with you?
What's going on? I'm just listening in, you know what I'm saying? That's all. I just wanted to let you know. I'm here and I'm listening.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, to everybody that's listening, Lynn Tate is a very, very strong artist, a very strong vocalist. She's going to be a part of the U-Dig umbrella. Where she was just in the studio, actually, with me yesterday, and she got a banger over here, and we're working She's got a song with another artist of mine named Lotto Dapper Don. He just killed the song, and they got a crazy record. She also on the record with Shorty Low and Rich Homie Quan, so she working, you know what I mean? So,
Congratulations. Thank you so much.
And thanks for the support, and we wish you all the success, and I can't wait to see that heat coming out of his corner.
You already know. All right, cool.
All right, well, the last few minutes of the show, because we got 3 minutes left, and we're going to let him give us a quick little interlude on Shorty Low. We're going to drop Shorty Low's beat, and then we're going to let Mr. L get back to his studio.
Okay, you know I got to give a list of shout-outs, but we're going to leave that for the end. But, this is Alaska, Shorty Low. This is his new breakout single. We gave y'all a snippet. Right now, we're thinking about putting Boosie on the record. Still kind of got our hands in the mix on it, you know what I mean? But right now, the song is going stupid. We doing shows everywhere. You know, Low has been, this is his comeback, man. It's the old Low, but the new sound is called Alaska. He spelled it ATL, Alaska. And there you have it, man. It's called Alaska, Shorty Low.
Drop that beat, man.
Turn up a little bit, baby.
Beating on the dime, nigga.
Yeah. LeBron and D-Wade, now.
I turned the trap into Alaska. How we end up the snow.
Woo! Woo!
I'm whipping dope, they think I'm cows.
Yeah!
Way I'm flying in the ghost. Come meet me in Alaska.
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 I'm whipping dope, I'm in the ghost. They think I'm cows.
Cows.
Alaska.
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 I made it snow before you know you got Alaska.
Yeah!
Turn the trap into Alaska.
Alaska.
How we end up the snow.
Woo! Woo!
I'm whipping dope, they think I'm cows.
Yeah!
Way I'm flying in the ghost. Come meet me in Alaska.
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 I'm whipping dope, I'm in the ghost. They think I'm cows.
Cows.
Alaska.
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 I made it snow before you know you got Alaska.
Yeah!
All right.
Hey, listen, let me clear that up. I think that was just the instrumental. I'm sitting there looking at my engineer like, nigga, you fucked up. Hey,
we got a sneak peek. That's all right. It could be anything.
Like I always say, you got to pay for the rest.
Listen, before we get off the line, let me give y'all a rundown. We got Lotto coming. He dropping a new single. That's How You Feel. We got Losi.